Lloyd, right?
That's right.
Yep.
Okay, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. And I'm the co-author. The main author is Grace Lloyd. She was a graduate student with me, and she's moved on to greener pastures and couldn't be here. And that's unfortunate for you because she's a lot smarter and funnier than I am. So this presentation will be a big contrast to the previous one and several that we've already heard in this session, and that we're going to move to a much more semi-arid environment in the Great Plains and look at the possibilities and constraints of harvesting biomass as a feedstock. And really the motivating figure for this is one I think a lot of you are familiar with. It's a figure that Wally Wilhelm and several co-authors put together where they looked in the Midwestern system in the Corn Belt. Can you take corn stover as a biomass feedstock, and what are the constraints for doing that? So in this system, they look at different tillage and different rotations, and the three bars show how much stover do you need to leave on the ground to achieve different goals. The first bar would be how much stover you need to leave to maintain soil organic carbon. And the best scenario would be a continuous corn rotation with no-till or conservation tillage system. You need to leave, according to their study results, 5.25 metric tons per hectare of stover just to keep the soil carbon from declining. The average production in those systems was about 7 metric tons per hectare. So in the Midwest, this meta-analysis would suggest that there's less than 2 tons of material available if your goal is to maintain carbon. In the semi-arid Great Plains, our total production of biomass, not just the stover, the total is less than 5 megagrams per hectare. So the other thing is you'll notice that the wind and water erosions were very relatively minor as constraints relative to the soil organic carbon constraint. And again, from the semi-arid Great Plains, we have major problems with wind erosion when you're not managing residues. So we decided to try and, come up with a similar analysis for a very different ecosystem. Plus, we get tired of being left out of all the biofuel discussions. Everybody just says, forget about the Great Plains. It's too arid. So the area I'm talking about, the Great Plains, it's an area of about 400 millimeters of annual precipitation. It varies a little bit from west to east. I'm from Colorado, but this project really is kind of eastern Colorado, western Kansas, western Nebraska. The map that I'm showing you here is actually the production map of hard red winter wheat in the United States. So this is a very important agricultural area in the U.S. because it's where we produce our bread-making wheats. So in defense of these areas, why should we look at them when most people have not, is a lot of people are saying, the problem with harvesting biomass for biofuels is competition for food production. And so the semi-arid Great Plains, there's more lower production marginal lands that would compete less for our food crops. These dry land systems have low land costs. So it might be another reason. A lot of times the economics of biofuels fall on their face, but maybe looking at these areas might have some advantage. But really the one that interests us is this third bullet point. The traditional practice in the Great Plains and these wheat production areas is a 2-year rotation of winter wheat and summer fallow. So it's one crop every other year, and it's that fallow year where soil carbon is declining, there's really no income coming to the farmer. They're very fragile systems, and so we're interested in knowing whether we could do something different in that fallow year, help meet some of the biomass needs, but also really help address some of the sustainability issues in the Great Plains. So the objectives of this study were to evaluate the biomass production potential. We're going to use wheat, corn, and sorghum as kind of model crops. None of these in our experiment were ever intended to be biomass crops. They're grain crops, they're traditional crops for that region. But we wanted to look at them as a model crop because we have a long data set looking at the fluctuations of biomass production. So we're using those as a model crop. And then we also wanted to kind of mimic that Wilhelm paper and say, what are the constraints from soil carbon and erosion? So we're using a long-term experiment that was started in 1985. It's an experiment that's located across a transect of eastern Colorado. It was started in the 80s when no-till was very uncommon, and it was really started to promote the concept of no-till. This is one of the sites. This is the Sterling site. You can see these long strips. They're fairly long experimental strips, and the reason for that is the experiment has a soil variable. The sites are laid out over a catena, so it has multiple soil types as part of the experimental design. These are the three. This is a map of Colorado, and you can see the north-south gradient. All of the sites get about the same annual rainfall, but there's a lot more annual evapotranspiration at the southern location. And then again, the actual experimental units were crop rotations. Can we do something different than wheat fallow in the Great Plains when we're no-tilling? Again, this experiment in the 80s, nobody was talking about biofuels. So we're going to use this data set using the grain crops to kind of set up a model and then simulate taking off residue instead of, we didn't actually harvest residue here. So this is a picture of one of the sites. You can see those strips and the soil type changes. Data is taken in each of those soil positions. Again, we have a 24-year-long data set, so it encompasses a lot of climate variability. And then two things here. We're going to look at the potential of harvesting residue. So you take the grain and come back and pick up the stover. But then we'll also look at the total biomass as a surrogate for what if we had a different crop that wasn't corn. It's a biomass crop. I'm going to skip through this really quickly, just that we used three different models for the simulation part of this. We used Russell 2 for the water erosion, WEQ for the wind erosion, and then the Descent model is an outstanding kind of ecosystem-based model for carbon and nitrogen balance work, and so we used that. All of the modeling work is done based on the actual conditions at those three locations that I showed you. Okay, so think small here compared to most of the presentations we've looked at. These are 24-year average biomass production at the three research locations. The first bar in each set is the corn crop, and so the bottom section of that bar in dark is the amount of grain biomass. The top section is the amount of stover. So if we were looking at a biofuel system where you harvest the grain and then come back and pick up the stover, it's just that top section. If we're looking at corn as a model crop for a different biofuel crop, then we can consider the full bar as the total biomass production. Interesting things on this graph, you'll see that at all three sites, the total amount of biomass is quite similar between corn and wheat. This is a winter wheat, you know, very different season than corn, but the total annual biomass production is fairly similar. I should have pointed out that all this is based on a rotation of wheat, corn, and fallow, so if you really want to, what we do is annualize the yield. You take the wheat and the corn, add them together, and divide by three because it takes 3 years to produce those two crops. So our annualized totals of stover are about 2.2 metric tons per hectare, way lower than what we just saw in the CRP in the Midwest. If you were looking at the total biomass, you know, you're getting closer to 4 tons per acre. But these are pretty small numbers as far as biomass. This one is just simply showing, instead of the three sites, it's showing the average of the three soil positions. So I just want to indicate, yeah, there's some sites where you can get a little more and some a little less, depending on the quality of the soil. And what really drives that is water holding capacity. And then another quick message here is, in the Great Plains, without irrigation, you're going to have a tremendous amount of interannual variability. So if you were doing a 3-year study on biofuel production potential and you picked those 3 or 4 years right there, you'd have a very different result than if you picked 3 different years. The Great Plains is a place of high fluctuating climate. And this is a major concern from a biofuel standpoint because the construction of a biofuel plant or an ethanol plant is highly dependent on a steady supply. And so maybe people that say we can't do biofuels in the Great Plains have some merit, you know, based on this variability. Okay, the erosion constraints. This is actually a pretty interesting graph I found. Basically, across the x-axis, we're saying how much of the residual or crop residue can we take off before we exceed the tolerable erosion level. This is one site. And if you look at the open circles, this is just removing corn stalks. You take off very little, as little as 20%, the wind erosion potential goes up dramatically. But surprisingly, on the wheat side of things, and there's actually more wheat biomass produced anyway. You can remove up to 80% or a little more than that before you start getting severe wind erosion. So you need to think about why that would be. And the hint I'll give you is think about the rotation sequence here. It's a wheat, corn, fallow rotation. So as you take off the corn stover, you're going into a long 14-month fallow period, a whole summer of fallow without a crop. And so the system is very vulnerable to removing corn stover. There are some other factors in there as far as the orientation of the residue that affects wind erosion. So if anything, it looks like we might be able to take off some wheat straw, but we probably can't take off very much corn stover. I'm not going to talk about this. The water erosion is fairly minimal. It's not a very big constraint because the rainfall is so low, there's not a driver for a lot of water erosion. So we'll just kind of skip through that one. And I'm also going to go very quickly past this. I just want to illustrate that we had an extensive validation process for our models. This is the validation of the Descent model. With the 25 years of data, we were able to get the model to work on some years and test it on other years. And it works pretty darn well as far as predicting both yields, soil carbon dynamics, and some of the yield parameters. So let me just get to the last result here. So we looked at the constraints to harvesting from an erosion standpoint. What about from a soil carbon standpoint? What these graphs show over about a 70-year simulation period is the soil carbon change for several scenarios. Oh, sorry, how do I go back? I am going back. Okay, so the first scenario, and it's the upper line in each of these graphs, is the scenario that was the one we were actually doing. No removal, we're just cropping, harvesting grain. And I'm going to make it fairly simple here. If you look at those, although there was an initial kind of equilibrium period, for the most part, that's a fairly flat line. So the way I'm interpreting that, again, not too scientific, but very simple, is if you take if you want to maintain soil organic carbon, you've got to leave all the residue that's being produced in these systems. This is a no-till system, wheat, corn, fallow. And that holds true for both Sterling and Stratton locations. As you start removing residue, the soil carbon declines initially and then stabilizes. And if you look at the magnitudes on these scales, well, they're not huge. I mean, we're not losing 50% of the carbon. In fact, it turns out to be about 10%, 5 to 10% of the carbon. So I don't know who decides these things. Is that a constraint for harvesting residue or not? I mean, how much carbon loss can we tolerate? My own personal opinion is these soils are already fairly degraded, fairly fragile, and so I think even 10% carbon loss is not sustainable in the long term. So my opinion is the amount of carbon we need to return is all of it. So once again, it's looking like our data is supporting the opinions that the harvesting stover materials from the semi-arid Great Plains is probably not a sustainable practice. So just to end with some, keep myself in the game somehow, what about dedicated bioenergy crops? So we looked at harvesting residue. Could we put a dedicated bioenergy crop in the system? And so we ran a model. This is getting outside of our actual field experiment now, where we used forage sorghum as the model crop and put it in place of corn. The first bar shows the total amount of biomass that is produced over a long-term period. The middle two bars would be the constraints for wind erosion and soil organic carbon. And so the third bar in black shows the amount of harvestable biomass in the Great Plains systems where you could maintain carbon and prevent excessive wind erosion. So we're looking at about 3 metric tons per hectare potentially. And these are annualized in that wheat, corn, fallow rotation. Okay, I'll conclude there. Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Hansen? I have a quick question about, I want to get your thoughts on terms of irrigated corn. Like, you know, we have a lot of irrigated corn, and, you know, I guess we got like 300 bushels per acre last year, I remember, in Colby's and research sites in western Kansas. So can we remove corn stover from those systems?
Yeah, I mean, irrigated systems clearly are, you know, very high in productivity, but there you do deal with other competing factors. Most of the residue in Colorado is used as a grazing source or bedding material, and so yeah, it's you can remove that material, but it's high value, high priced. So I think there was one other question.
Thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by flat line, but I think what if you were building a bioenergy plant here, you'd have to build it based on the minimum amount of material that you could get, and then if you had more, they can sell it to some other market. But again, the message I think here is in these dry land systems, if you're harvesting grain, there's really not any available biomass left for, and if you're trying to maintain soil organic carbon. So I guess my answer is zero. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.